Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm going to have a spoiler-filled discussion with my sister Kay on Psych 2, Lassie Come Home. This is a TV movie based on the Psych TV show. I believe it originally aired on Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the whole gang back together.
Which is wonderful because we know... Okay, the previous Psych movie, which I can't remember what subtitle it had, but... In that Psych movie, Timothy Oliphant basically wasn't there. I think he had maybe one video.
It was a cameo at best.
Yeah.
But he had suffered, was it a stroke at that point?
It was a major stroke.
Yeah. And they'd kind of written that in to part of the story here.
Well, I'd read an article where in an interview, I mean, he made a good recovery, not 100%, but a very good recovery. And he said in the interview that he's been asking writers to write the stroke in to help him not only raise awareness, but to make people aware. I get it. My memory's not as sharp as it was. I don't look the way I looked. I can't do the things I did, but I can still act. I'm still in here.
Yeah, no, he did a good job in that. And it's good that he's made such a good recovery.
Yeah.
I'd seen him in... I thought something else. What did he did something after his stroke before this.
He guest starred in a TV show, and I can't think what show it was, but it was kind of as the neighbor.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And there again, he had the stroke written in.
Mm-hmm. I forget which show that was. I should have looked that up. But, you know, he was one of the central characters here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole story revolved around... his character, Lassiter, having gotten shot, the recovery, all of that. And there's a bit of almost a Rear Window kind of aspect to it at times.
Well, they're very much trying to figure out who shot him, why he was shot, but also there's this subplot of what's really going on in this rehab hospital he's in. And there's an element of, and I think... Corbin Burnson's character really had the best line about it. He's like, Lassiter doesn't have an imagination.
Yes, yes.
What
you think his imagination's going wild? He doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that really summed up the whole, people are saying, you know, don't encourage his imagination by investigating the sounds he thinks he's hearing in the pipes and the vents. And he thinks he's seeing a comatose patient walking in the night and this, that, and the other. But that was a fun, it was part of the main plot, but it was a subplot.
Well, they were able to get a lot of mileage out of it, and it wasn't just Sean and Gus, you know, sneaking around to investigate the thing. Jules was doing the same thing.
Right, because it wasn't in her jurisdiction.
I don't remember if Gus's girlfriend had been introduced in the last movie or not.
I have a nagging feeling she had been, because the last movie was, as I recall, it culminated in the move to LA, or to San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's when that literally culminated there. But the whole thing was the wedding, the engagement ring in the battery compartment of the Nintendo Game Boy-ish thing that got stolen.
But I thought that was... for Sean to give Jules.
Right, it was. But I think that Gus had a girlfriend at that point. But it was just kind of, how can you be so adult that you even have an engagement ring? And then it's in the Nintendo.
Yeah, it's been long enough since I've watched that movie.
Yeah.
And it's been even longer since I've watched episodes of the show. And they've got a lot of the same shtick from the show. But what I think made the show work better than... this movie, for me, was when they would do individual episodes, this would be a riff on this movie or this genre or, you know, whatever.
Well, and in the first movie, some of what they did, for me, fell flat. Like, the trying to juxtapose the juvenile aspect of hiding it in the battery compartment of mm-hmm. the Nintendo with the adult aspect of I'm ready to get engaged. Whereas in this one, the equivalent was he finds the positive pregnancy test.
Yeah.
And Sean is trying to juxtapose the am I ready to be an adult and a father against all these very juvenile things he's doing in the investigation.
The arc of that character throughout the entire series is will he ever grow up?
Yes.
Will he ever become responsible?
And they used his father brilliantly for that.
Yeah. And I think the is he going to become a father subplot here worked.
Yes.
But I felt there was a lot of wackiness for the sake of wackiness versus...
But that was a hallmark of the show.
It was, but it felt more organic in the show. And here it felt a little forced and a little, well, they're expecting us to do this.
Yeah, there were some tonal changes that I wonder when this was written and when this went through production.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because, like, the nicknames for Gus, that was always part of the show. And there was always an aspect of Gus saying, no, that's not my name, versus, yeah, okay, I'll take that nickname. But here, it wasn't just Gus a step behind Sean doing the head shaking or the nodding and the, yeah, thumbs up, I'm okay with that. Here he was standing next to Sean saying, no, I have veto rights.
Yeah,
there on the was nicknames.
More of an, I don't say an even pairing. What surprised me is it took at least a half hour in before we got any of one of the other hallmarks of the show where Sean would be looking around and you'd get the visual clue in of, oh, he spotted that clue or this thing or that. And you're trying to figure out what he means, and then he pieces it together for us.
Well, and I kept waiting for that. And actually, I thought they missed a great opportunity to use that when the dog comes running back in after he's been out mm-hmm. missing or whatever, and he has what amounts to a piece of evidence in his mouth. And I just wanted them to do the zoom in.
Oh, as that if would it have been hilarious. It's blatantly obvious, but that's what he clues in on.
Yes! For me, that would fit with the show's sense of humor.
That would have been very good and gotten the thing back in there earlier. It also would have been funny if during the hallucination scene, we saw it happening in some kind of a humorous way.
Yes.
The other thing that took until, man, an hour or more in was the hold the fingers up to the head, fake the psychic aspect.
Yeah.
And he kind of sort of dropped that or whatever a little in the last movie, but the name of the show is Psych because he was claiming to be psychic.
Yeah.
And that part not being there bothered me a little bit. And again, the kind of the way he visualizes the world not being there.
Yes.
Because that was something they'd set up in the first few minutes of the show where he's, you know, with a girlfriend or whatever, watching TV, clues in on the stuff, calls in an anonymous tip to solve the case kind of thing.
Well, and that was basically his income source when the show started was the tipster's hotline or whatever it's called, 10,000 here, 10,000 there.
It would have been funny if they had used that. He's just kind of doing it instinctively now as he's walking down the street or something.
Yeah.
But able to channel it or something. Because I could never tell during this what his day job was.
There was no sign of a day job for him. There was no sign of an active case for Juliet, even though she mentioned a case that she was filing something under. But that wasn't, there was no sign of, I need to go here, but I want to go here. I'll get someone else to cover for me. There was really no sign other than Chief Vic, who she was working with up in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
No sign of a partner or anything.
Because a lot of it was taking place in Santa Barbara versus San Francisco, although they bounced between the two.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how far of a commute it is, because there was talk about catching the flight or whatever.
Santa Barbara, as I recall, is like a little north of Riverside. I've never been, but as I recall, it's a little further north than Riverside and that kind of stuff. So it's probably 5 or 6 hour drive, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. So like here in Texas, that'd be like an Austin to Dallas kind of half hour flight, not counting getting through security, getting over to the airport, and you know, all that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although Jewel seemed to have her car at one point.
Yeah.
And that was when we saw...
The girlfriend.
The girlfriend was with her, but the cop.
Oh, yes. And I can't think of his name either. He only had really the one scene, but he was pretty well used there.
He was well used, and he was one of the regulars in the show of just kind of the grunt cop or whatever. We got Woody, the medical examiner.
He's always funny. That's a great character.
Yeah, a little more over the top than I care for, but they stay consistent with it.
Totally true. I mean, he gets mailed. He's a coroner. Mailed a piece of evidence to give feedback on, and when he starts the video call with the smoked meat was excellent in the package, and they're like, we sent you evidence.
Well, and Sean's like, well, it was going to cost the same thing either way. The problem with that is Gus was there when Sean mailed it.
Yeah, very true. Yeah.
So, funny, but plot hole.
Yeah.
To a very minor degree. When did he pick up the meat? How did he get it in there? You know.
Well, they had the discussion that they stopped on the way to mail the evidence because Gus was giving him grief.
Yeah, but not in a way that Gus noticed he was getting extra meat, putting it in the box.
Yeah, I agree.
I did find that the old location for the psych office had been basically taken over by Sean's dad, who was then subletting it out for pop-up stores or whatever.
Yeah.
And the cat bar or whatever was hilarious.
Well, Lassiter's errand list was priceless.
That's one that we actually freeze frame on and read through, and that was kind of funny. And the fact they go through those sorts of minutiae and details, I appreciate.
Well, on the back side of the list, forgive, forget, forget forgiving. It was just, you know, you could tell somebody had fun writing the list.
I'm curious... Who wrote the list?
Mm.
Who had some of those ideas? Because I think it's Steve Frank who created and writes the show. But James Rodet, who's now going by James Rodet Rodriguez, which is apparently his real name, had a lot of creative input on the show.
Yeah.
A lot of the ad libs. And it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd done like the writing of the note sort of a thing.
Yeah, I had the feeling that either he did or kind of the cast got together on it.
Yeah, they seem to have a lot of fun doing the show.
Yeah, they do. Well, and I saw them do panels at Con at least 2 years. And yeah, they get along well.
That's good to see because we've seen a couple of casts at various conventions that one or two were so stiff and I don't say formal with each other, but almost uncomfortable with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are others where it's like, yeah, they clearly hang out in their off hours.
Well, there was one of the psych panels. They were there on Corbin Burnson's birthday.
Mm.
And they, you know, the castmates were teasing him, you know, all the places you could go on your birthday. And this is where you pick. And he said, are you kidding? This is amazing. My kids think I'm lame. So here's what I need. I'm going to pull out my phone I need a video of 1,000 people singing happy birthday to me to prove to my kids there are people out there who don't think I'm lame. And the whole cast is like, yes, we have to do this.
That's funny. Because he was on L.A. Law, which was a pretty big show in its time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the plot line here was a little...
Thin?
Thin, convoluted, but was kind of what I was expecting.
They got there, they pulled it all together, and in some respects, it was a typical psych plot line.
Yeah. Well, and I guess while it's a mystery show, the part I enjoyed about it... was how they would solve a standard police procedural, PI procedural kind of a case with, through the lens of a telenovela or I'm trying to, you know, a horror film or whatever genre they'd picked for the week.
Well, as I recall, they did basically a black and white film noir.
They did a musical one.
Yeah.
They covered all sorts of genres and kind of themes and motifs or whatever.
Well, and there were some times where you might not be able to tell before the guest cast what the theme was going to be, but then you get the guest cast and you're like, wait a sec, isn't that everyone that was in Clue?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I wonder what we're up to.
Well, and the other thing that was a lot of fun was they would occasionally redo the intro music.
Yes.
They had, for the telenovela one, it was in Spanish. They had a couple others where...
They had, I might get the group wrong, was it Boys to Men that did it?
Yeah, they had a couple do riffs on the theme, but in their style or something.
Yeah.
And there was one where the joke was, you're expecting the same theme song and it's not, and that's what the theme song's lyrics is about.
Yeah.
So they didn't take themselves too seriously, but they told a really good show, and I like seeing the characters back.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little bit to get back into kind of the tone, the style, the groove of the show.
And it has a unique groove.
It does.
I mean, there was an aspect of, at the time it was a show on the air, there was the debate of, is it a ripoff of The Mentalist? Is it The Mentalist a ripoff of Psych? But they were two very different beasts.
Oh, yeah, because this was much more comedic, and Mentalist was the reverse take of it,
mm-hmm.
almost, and a much more serious kind of a show.
Well, and The Mentalist came from the approach more of a con artist.
Yeah.
He's turned good. But he really was a con artist.
Well, it was a guy who claimed to be psychic, almost turning con artist, versus a guy who wasn't literally a con artist, but faked being a psychic. I mean, it was the same, flip side of the same concept, almost.
I guess my point is, on Mentalist, he'd been using it to bilk lots of money out of people.
Yeah, he was a TV charlatan psychic.
And he was
debunking the psychicness as the
yes.
working with the police, the California Bureau of Investigation or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas Sean was very actively pretending to be psychic
yeah.
while solving the case the hard way,
but never doing it in a greedy or malicious way.
No.
Which to me was pivotal differences between the characters.
Yeah. This one had more of a heart of gold, and goofballish, whereas The Mentalist was much more cynical.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I'd love to see somebody do, like a streaming service show, where it's a convention of detectives, where you get Monk, Sean from Psych, you know, The Mentalist, all of those quirky PIs and detectives and whatnot.
Yeah.
Coming at some problem or whatever. Just to kind of constantly compare and contrast the styles and whatnot. Because, I mean, there have been enough of these investigator shows of one variant or another, whether police, FBI, private investigator, whatever, that it's gotten to where they almost have to do the, he's crazy neurotic like Monk, he's faking to be a psychic detective like Sean here in Psych, or, you know, he used to do that, but now he's disproving all this and just doing mental manipulation of people,
yeah.
as in The Mentalist, that you've got to have that extra layer because people have seen the basic procedural.
Mm-hmm.
And again, here with this movie, TV movie, they're going for the tone, the style, the comedy, the familiar shtick from the show.
Yeah.
And I think if I had, like, gone and watched the show from the beginning through then the first TV movie and then this, that this would have worked much better for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd have gotten back into the tone, the style
yeah.
of the show, whereas it's been so long since I'd seen the show. And I don't remember when that last movie came out, but it was
yeah,
at least 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
That it takes a little bit to kind of get back in, and there's no good way for the writer, director, the cast to ease us back into that.
Yeah.
So it was fun. It was good. But I don't know that I would recommend starting with this.
No.
I would go back to the first season, start with the pilot. I think they did a really good job setting up the premise, the tone, the style, and most importantly, the characters.
Yeah. And I would definitely start, like you're saying, with the pilot and the first season, as opposed to even starting with the first movie. Because for me, the first movie wasn't all that strong.
Well, and it's building on relationships that they'd spent, what was it, 8 seasons
something
building
like
up?
That.
7-8 seasons?
Yeah. I mean, it had a long, good run, and it was a USA show.
It was on USA, so I think it was only like 13-episode seasons.
Yeah.
But they used them well
mm-hmm.
and built up a a distinctive style and show.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think they instantly got the character set up, the premise set up, all of that in the pilot. Very well done. I mean, from the minute you meet Sean.
Yeah.
You understand he's a goofball. He's trying to do the right thing, whatever. But it took him a while to really get into the groove of the show. To, okay, here's where we're going to put the 80s references. Here's where we're going to go down this genre. Here's where we're going to take this spin on it.
Well, and really, as I recall in the pilot, part of why he set up the psych agency was he could not just be a fake psychic, but it was almost like a fake job.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole concept. I mean, it's so juvenile to think I can create a fake job doing something else fake and people will pay me to have an office.
Well, working so hard to not work.
Yeah.
That was always kind of the quandary. It's not like Sean was lazy.
Yeah.
Just a little unfocused.
Yeah. Well, and Gus always had a job and always needed to be at that job and was always getting dragged away by Sean, which is something we didn't see in this at all.
There was a little bit of dialogue of, I guess, more avoiding the girlfriend than anything about the job.
Yeah.
And I just, again, forget where they'd left these characters employment-wise. Because it might have been that they were, well, I was going to say, actually helping out the police in San Francisco legitimately.
I was going to say, I think Sean was trying to set an agency up there.
I think he'd actually gotten from the chief a consulting gig, provided he didn't claim to be psychic.
Yeah.
I don't remember. So I hope they do more of these.
Yeah, me too.
But I think they need to kind of tighten it up a little bit. I mean, they hit the comedy stuff well. The plot, while it was a little insane, held together enough.
Well, I mean, some of the comedy bits, in terms of they act like children, they think like children, they're better than trained dogs, but by how much?
Mm-hmm.
There's the bit with the motorcycle, where Sean finally confesses, after all those seasons he had the motorcycle, did you ever actually see him ride it?
Well, and I like those kinds of in-jokes of, yes, I had it, but I never rode it. You never saw me do that. I guess what I'd like to see in another one of these movies is a better sense of what they're riffing on.
Yeah. Well, but
and I would almost at that point go with trilogies.
But part of where I was going with that was when, A, he doesn't know how to ride the motorcycle, so he can't turn it, and they end up crashing. Somebody comes, finds them, gets shot, and Gus's like, what do we do? And Sean's reaction is, play dead.
Well, the fact that they crashed into where the guy was.
Yeah.
Was a little convenient and happenstantial or whatever, and that was, I guess, the part that was annoying me a little bit.
But I wasn't sure if that's actually where the guy was, or if the guy saw the whole thing and came out. It was unclear to me.
Yeah, there were certain parts of, if you were to map out what was the bad guy, who was the bad guy, what was their plot, and what was all the key players' timeline through this, it's convoluted and a little crazy.
Yeah.
But not out of character for the show.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's where getting back into it, because I think a lot of what helped the show, hour long versus however long, hour and a half-ish, two hours, whatever. So less time to fill per mystery. And then the subplot was always, what was Sean's either relationship status and you know, what was going on with that? Or is he, you know, having a problem with his dad? Or how is he, you know, interacting with the police? Is he in, out, you know, whatever? And that was always enough buffer for the comedy and subplot type stuff that you didn't need to have the world's craziest plot.
Well, they did one season where they did a pretty good arc of Lassiter is actually the son Sean's dad wishes he's had.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that his dad only came to see Lassiter that we saw at the rehab place, what, twice?
Well, what got me was it took until the very end to see Lassiter's wife.
Yes, I kept wondering. And then we get a line of dialogue, I sent her away. We weren't told that earlier.
We should have been.
Yeah.
And why wasn't she talking to anybody else?
Yeah. Why weren't they at least texting her?
Why wasn't O'Hara giving him a hard time?
Yeah.
On why won't you see your wife? That kind of a thing. Because I'd watched the credits because it's like, I knew the, you know, Christy Swanson was playing the role. She was in the credits. Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where this is the kind of show they could bring back at some point if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I want to see more of these TV movies, but I think it would work better for me as a show because it would give them regular length installments, if you will, to kind of do it. I think it gets the humor out, allows them to switch, you know, mysteries a little more, and gives them better slots to kind of riff on different things.
Yeah.
This one just felt unfocused.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, but I remember enjoying the show more than I enjoyed this.
Yeah. For me, this was just them having a lot of fun, and it happened to have a thin plot to hold the laughter together.
Exactly. It felt wacky, whereas at the high points of the show, it was really well done.
Yeah.
And this was not poorly done. It just is hard to reach that bar coming in cold, doing a 2-hour thing, and closing it off kind of, you know, again, not permanently, but in terms of end of this story. So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.